Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Holy moly, opened a new season of Miniature Golf Zaniness Tuesday on ABC with the Muppets taking to the course. Executive producer Charles Wachter joins me after the bottom of the hour. Also ahead, the chimes are ringing for Chime TV. Quantum Leap leaps back on NBC. Our classic trivia question and a trio, yes, a trio, of takeaways of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Verbal, Reason, Spotify, and Amazon Music. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to all the good stuff whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. It is a very cloudy, gray, and yes, rainy afternoon here in the Big Apple. We welcome you on this Friday to the program all about TV's current and future. 57 degrees at the top of the hour. We have a nice guest for you coming up after the bottom of the hour. And we invite you, no matter where you are over the course of the next 60 minutes, to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. And we've got a chat room in business for you. It's SimonApple04 by name. And all you have to do is go to blogtalkradio.com/televised and use it. While the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Stream. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Now let's go live with news notes. A new Asian-American television network is on the launch pad. Chime TV, an independently organized venture featuring general entertainment and informational programming, has signed top cable operator Charter Communications, otherwise known as Spectrum, as its first affiliate. The service was made available to other multi-channel operators, smart TV product providers, and multi-channel bundles. Chime, which stands for Creating History in Media and Entertainment, intends to premiere by year's end. And we hope sometime next week to have the president of the service on this very program. In other new channel developments, Warner Music Group's media unit, known as WMX, is exploring one or more smart TV service offerings involving music videos, live concerts, documentaries, and first-run ad-supported material. A decision to go forward is expected by this summer. It's a go for NBC's updated the popular 1989-93 time travel series, Quantum Leap. Raymond Lee will star in the sequel, getting a team assembled to restart the Quantum Leap project. Original Quantum star Scott Bakula will not take part. Incidentally, he is working on a TV pilot for another network. However, creator Donald Osorio will as executive producer. We'll learn when the time hopping starts later this month during NBC's presentation of its 2022-23 primetime lineup at Radio Music Hall as part of the presentation by parent NBC Universal. Finally, two quickies. Coming soon to PBS's American Masters, Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys in the documentary Long Promised Road. PBS will premiere this Masters installment June 14th. And the first ever People's Choice Latin Music Awards show will show up on Telemundo next spring. And that is news notes for today. At this moment, several hundred people in the media, TV, advertising world are catching a lot of shut-eye and plenty of deep breaths this Friday afternoon, because they and yours truly has just gone through a whirlwind of activity with the first ever Digital Content New Fronts in person here in the Big Apple for the first time in 3 years, hopefully post-pandemic. And let me tell you, it was an amazing experience going to all sorts of in-person and yesterday virtual upfront events, many of which I've been covering for Media Village, the Media Leadership website. In fact, if you go to MediaVillage.com, you will be able to read my comments on some of the various events. And we'll also have more commentary from some of the events that we haven't talked about yet. They will be on Media Village, hopefully, early Monday. So watch out for that. And I'd love to hear what you think about the commentary. So go to MediaVillage.com, www.MediaVillage.com, for all the great coverage of the Digital Content New Fronts. And the Digital Content New Fronts, for me, yielded three takeaways of the week. As you know, on most of our Fridays, we now have a takeaway of the week feature where we spotlight the one development that we think you should take away from the week that it will impact the way you watch and use television. Well, because of all the action that unfolded at Digital Content NewFronts, and incidentally, congratulations to the Interactive Ad Bureau for making it all happen as seamlessly as possible, there were three takeaways that came out loud and clear. So for our takeaway of the week, which we usually do on the second half of an hour show, we're doing it in the first half because these three takeaways, I think, are going to be monumental to how television will go, not only the rest of this year, but probably the rest of this decade. Takeaway number one, smart TV sets and smart TV device makers are in the content-making business to stay. That's right, to stay. They're not only, whether it's Amazon or Roku or Vizio, Samsung, LG, as well as multi-channel bundles like Tubi and Philo and Pluto TV, Zumo, Local Now, Stir, so forth. The smart TV content is going to be a major part of what these companies do here on in. They're not just going to aggregate new services. They are going to create new services. And when it comes to programming, that means channels and original content. For example, Roku. The Roku channel is red hot. And you know, they are now in the content-making business, both scripted and unscripted. And they had a lot to talk about at their greenhouse-like upfront event at Chelsea Factory. They are going to be doing, for example, a big deep dive into lifestyle content. Three shows involving Martha Stewart, two shows involving Emma Lagasse, two shows from another popular chef, and more. And they also are making original movies. Believe it or not, one of the surprise celebrities that showed up was none other than Harry Potter star Daniel Radcliffe, who is going to be playing Weird Al Yankovic in a movie called, appropriately, Weird. He first came out on stage, then dropped back into the shadows, and we had a chance to see the preview of the film. Let me tell you something. Don't be surprised if this film is as advertised. Daniel Radcliffe is up for an Emmy Award for Best Made for TV Movie Performance by an Actor. He is that great as Weird Al Yankovic, and that's just from judging just a couple of minutes of him in action. Really special. Then there's Amazon, which had one of the most ambitious upfront events Monday night at Lincoln Center in the David Koch Theater, and then outside for a super after party at the Josie Robinson Plaza, which, by the way, will become a dance floor this summer for the return of Midsummer Night's Swing, now incorporated into a special Summer in New York project. They'll run 3 months rather than just 3 weeks. Amazon is turning Freeview into a mega content service that could have as much impact, if not more, than Prime Video. And if you didn't think so, then check out not only Amy Poehler showing up as host, but also Jennifer Salke, the head of Amazon Studios, basically saying, we are taking this seriously. We have turned IMDb TV into Freevee, and Freevee is going to be our ticket to a second mega content service. They have a lot of irons in the fire on this. And if that's not enough, Vizio, Samsung, LG are all creating new original channels that will be exclusive to their services, with more in the pipeline. So don't leave any doubt to yourself that when it comes to original content, the smart TV set and device makers are going to play and play big, whether it's creating channels or creating original series. And you have a hunch, they're going to end up being pretty good at it. Takeaway number two. If you think you've seen an explosion of new channels available on smart TV sets, devices, and bundles that have been tapping up over the last 2.5, 3 years, as Al Jolson would say, you ain't seen nothing yet. Because there were a lot of announcements, particularly over the last 48 hours, of brand new, what some call FAST, free ad-supported channels, or AVOD, advertising video on demand channels, that were announced by all sorts of players, big and small. There is going to be an explosion of new services popping this summer, this fall, and beyond. You just heard, for example, Warner Music Group which was the last of the New Front players last night down in Soho, through their launch last November venture, WMX, is now looking at doing one or more smart TV distributed channels, as I said, incorporating music videos, thousands of them, documentaries, lots of concerts live and taped, and original first-run material from their various WXM brands, including Up Rocks. And that's just one player. And what's amazing is the range of channels that people are proposing is running the gamut. Scripted, unscripted, genres, incredible stuff. And I bet you we have not seen anywhere near the kind of explosion we're going to get. It's going to be something. And why is it happening? Because you're watching these channels. Because they have a smaller ad load, a smaller commercial load than broadcast and cable television. Whereas broadcast and cable networks now pack in 5, 6, 7 minutes of commercials in one commercial break and have these commercial breaks 4 or 5 times in the course of an hour, whether primetime, daytime, sports programming, et cetera. If you go to a mega content service like Peacock or HBO Max or Paramount Plus, and some of these channels like CuriosityStream, and some of the channels that we have been presenting over the course of the last 2.5 years on this program that are ad-supported, the most you get is 5 to 6 minutes, spaced throughout the hour, and with a single commercial break lasting no longer than 90 seconds, 2 minutes tops. So there's appeal for both viewers, like you, and appeal for the thousands of advertisers currently doing national messages and campaigns, and a lot of people that want to get in on the national level, too. So if you think, again, you have seen all the players involved in putting these channels on, think again. More is on the way. Lots more. I'm sure there will be disappointments. I'm sure there'll be failures. But you get a sense, given the appetite of the American public when it comes to television, an appetite that I think is often underappreciated and underrated, don't be surprised if there are more winners than losers. And don't be surprised if the end result is a wider diversity of programming. And that, by the way, includes programming aimed and produced by people of color, whether the community of color is African-American, Latino, Asian-American, as we just saw with Chime TV, or just heard with Chime TV, Native American, and, of course, the gay, lesbian, et cetera, community. There is much, much more to come. And incidentally, there were a number of organizations that couldn't get into digital content new fronts with formal presentations, so they did some things on the side. Incidentally, next Friday, we're going to cover one of those companies called Blockboard. Some very interesting developments they want to do on both original content and advertising using blockchain technology and perhaps cryptocurrency. The third takeaway of the week may be the most important. Shoppable TV, here at last. In his presentation at Chelsea Factory, Roku delivered not only the bombshell of the week, but also maybe the most important story that will emerge from these new fronts and maybe the most important story in television this year. They declared, we are getting into shoppable television. The kind of shoppable TV where you don't have to use a mobile phone or a laptop or a tablet to order a product or service. As early as this summer, Roku, specifically the Roku channel, is going to show commercials where if you want to buy a specific product that's displayed in the commercial, there will be an overlay, small overlay, on one side of the screen. And all you have to do is use your voice or your voice remote, or your remote, to press OK and then order the product or order the service and add it to your shopping cart, a shopping cart that you will keep on display ready to go on your television screen. Now, keep in mind this. Up until now, when people have talked about shoppable TV, they basically said, if you see the product on the television set, you have to then do a Q code with your smartphone or some other thing, and you have to order with your smartphone, not through the set. What Roku has come to realize, and something that I have been talking about here and Media Village and elsewhere when I go in public and talk to people, is that for the last 2 years or so, every smart or most smart TV sets and devices have artificial intelligence built in. Video service, voice service, especially voice services like Siri and Alexa and Google Assistant and Cortana, that otherwise you would have to use a separate speaker to activate. No, you do it through the television set, and that means you can control the set with your voice. It is the smoking gun that makes interactive television possible and makes it so consumer-friendly. So why do you need a smartphone? Why should you need a laptop? Why should you need a Q code with another device when you're watching television to get the transaction done? As a Roku executive aptly put it on stage when introducing this concept, phones take the audience away. Remotes draw the audience in and keep them occupied. Now, this overlay approach is only one of two that Roku is going to do. The other is going to deal with retail merchandise sold by the likes of a Walmart, a Costco, Big Lots, Target, maybe Dollar Tree, Dollar General. And here's how that would work. When the ad shows up on the screen, prompting you to order and buy the product, you again use your voice or your voice remote, and you also get the opportunity to pay for the product on the spot using a system called Roku Pay. Again, it's all done through the television set. You don't need a smartphone, no Q code, no other code, just your voice or your voice remote and you watching the TV set and just getting prompt to both order the product or service and pay. That simple. Now keep in mind that both of these types of ads are going to start running this summer. Oh, incidentally, Roku also said, get ready, we're not done yet. More announcements about new added features to our shoppable TV process before the holidays. If Roku makes this work, and if advertisers go gung-ho for this, this will open up one of the biggest multi-billion dollar revenue streams the TV industry has ever seen. It is going to catapult interactive television and viewer interest in buying products on the TV set or services like you wouldn't believe. And I think it's also going to provoke a lot of websites that offer services from Angie to delivery services like HelloFresh and DoorDash and Grubhub into doing their own smart TV apps available 24/7. I have to think that in a lot of places next week, there is going to be a lot among advertisers, among retailers, all over both these industries, there is going to be a lot of discussion about whether or not to use Roku's process. And you can't say this enough. If Roku makes this work, you better believe Amazon's going to do it. You better believe other smart TV set makers will find an alliance to work with. and advertisers will jump on board while it's no tomorrow. And you better believe that not only will the mega content services that already sell an ad-supported tier at a lower price to you, like HBO Max and Peacock and Paramount Plus and services like Crackle and so forth, they already take advertising, but it will, I think, provoke Disney Plus into making a big play when they launch their ad-supported tier this fall, and Netflix may up the timetable when they will get in to not only taking ads, but using ads to maybe supply new products and services. This situation that Roku declared earlier this week has monumental consequences for you, the viewer, the TV industry, the advertising industry, and the retailing industry. We are talking multiple billions of dollars and multiple people like you taking part in an interactive revolution that might not have happened in this manner. So those are your three takeaways of this week, and they are big takeaways. Smart TV sets, smart devices becoming major, not minor, major content players. The universe of fast channels widening and widening and widening in the months ahead. And shoppable TV coming to life. And boy, what a life. I want to hear from you. If Roku offered or other people offered a shoppable vehicle for you to use regularly, would you do it? What about interactive television? Would you become a believer? And what do you think about Amazon Freevee and the Roku channel and things like that? Let me know. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Or don't forget, you can also find me on social media through Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum. And Twitter, UBC Simon, TWBT. That's Twitter, UBC Simon, TWBT. I'd love to hear what you think. When you are a witness to developments like these breaking out, I'll tell you this. As a journalist covering television, your heart flies. It keeps you in the business, keeps your attitude open and young and fun, so on and so forth. So again, let's hear from you, our wonderful audience. And speaking of our wonderful audience, I want to thank everybody who tuned in to our big 90-minute show yesterday. Boy, we had, I think, one of our all-time great guest parades. We had from the new Mike Myers Netflix series, The Penitent, director, executive producer Tim Kirkby. We had from Series Fest, which opened up yesterday, successfully, I might add, in Denver, Colorado, first time in 3 years in person, Initiatives producer Lauren Grimshaw Sloan, and from the popular Peacock series Girls 5 Eva here in New York, executive producer and showrunner Meredith Scredino. So to all three, Tim, Lauren, Meredith, thank you so much for being with us. It was really a pleasure to have all three of you, and I hope, if you didn't get a chance to catch the show yesterday, catch it as soon as you can, either later today or over the weekend. BlogTalkRadio.com/televised and on all of our podcast sites. I think you'll find it a wonderful 90-minute show. And I'll tell you, when you get three guests like we had yesterday, it's easy to be in this host chair. You just listen, 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 and have a lot of fun. More tomorrow for Televised coming away, but first we have some words from the fine folks at our sponsor, Audible.com. One of our great national acting treasures right now is Viola Davis. Her wonderful performances in film and on television, Oscar nominated, Emmy winning, so forth, just super. Well, Viola has had her hard knocks in life too, and she now describes in a brand new book called Finding Me. It is a revelatory book about a marvelous mover and shaker in the world of television and film. And you can now get a copy or have a chance to listen to Finding Me. You can find it right now as part of your one-month trial with Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment, information, and very much so inspiration. There's over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, or a podcast destination. All you have to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. TELEVISED. You get one free audiobook, that 1 month trial, plus great customer service from Audible's parent, yes, Amazon.com, and while the supply lasts, very important health and wellness information. And if you're an Amazon Prime member already, you get two audiobooks for your trial of one. One of those titles can be from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio productions, podcast series, the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man performances. All superb. And they're available to you anytime. And by the way, there may be some discounts available as well if you sign up. So for all details, go to audibletrial.com/televised and start hearing how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. It all starts to listen to the good stuff, and that all starts when you go to audibletrial.com/televised. Remember, audible.com makes a great gift for you or someone you love any time of the year. Coming up Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we are back at our regular time again, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, and we have a great opening guest for you from the popular and critically acclaimed new series, Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, that premiered yesterday on Paramount Plus. We've got a co-star who's very special. His name is Bruce Horak. He is not only an actor, but a writer and director, and he plays a very unique character on Strange New Worlds, which many critics are calling either the best Star Trek series in a while, the best Star Trek series in years, the best Star Trek series in decades, the best Star Trek series in the Next Generation, and a love letter to the original series in the 1960s on NBC. And what makes Bruce very special and very inspirational is that he is blind in one eye and has difficulties with the other. And it hasn't stopped him for using his talent in a very, very big way. Bruce Horak, he will be our lead guest Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, from Star Trek Strange New Worlds, right here, exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised. And next Friday, 1 week from today, we'll have the two key people behind a brand new venture that was announced yesterday at Digital Content New Fronts. It's called Blockboard. It is both a new programming venture and a new services venture for advertisers that uses blockchain technology and cryptocurrency to get their job done. We will speak with the founder and chief executive officer, Matt Wasseloff, and the president and chief technical officer, Taran Yadar. That's all coming up, Blockboard. That's 1 week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Remember, when you come in late on the program or you want to catch up an episode you missed, and we've had some good ones so far this month and last month too, all you have to do is go to our homepage anytime you like. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, our podcasts are available 24/7, and they're available on everywhere from iTunes to Apple Podcasts, Spreaker Podcast, TuneIn.com, iHeartRadio's Podcast Network, Verbal Reason, our newest affiliate, Spotify, and much more. Incidentally, we may have a special announcement for you about another unique aspect of Tomorrow Be Televised, and we hope to have that for you 1 week from today. Coming up in our next half hour, our classic trivia question of the week, and back for the second time with us, the executive producer of ABC's Holy Moly, starting its fourth season with the Muppets this past Tuesday night, Charles Lochter. He will join us live from the East Coast after we pause near the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio in the universe. It's blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunein.com. Together, they reach over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love Mother Love, stand by your radio or sit by also, because we've got the Mother Love Show coming up later today, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific to be exact. It's Mother Love as only Mother Love can be. The Mother Love Show. Check it out later today, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best speech are 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this quite gray and on-and-off rainy day here in New York City. Simon Avon with you live from the Big Apple, 57 degrees at the bottom of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our guest ahead, all you got to do is ring it in. Just use this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name. My guest today is back with us for the second time. We had him several years ago when he was starting a show on ABC with Steph Curry and a few other people called Holy Moly. Well, on Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, Pacific 2, Holy Moly came back for its fourth season, again hosted by Joe Tessitore, who I find one of the best play-by-play people around, plus Rob Riegel and Jeannie Mai and Steph Curry and that crazy miniature golf course. Oh, yeah, one more thing, too, the Muppets. Joining us live, once again, an NRA exclusive executive producer, Charles Wachter. Charles, welcome back. And he should be coming aboard any second. Hang on. All right, Charles, we got to have you call back. So call back in shortly. Same number, 646-652-2906. As soon as I see that you're back with us, we will get you back on the line. So I'll tell you what, while I wait for Charles to call us back again, let's do our classic trivia question. Get that out of the way. So this is our final time for this particular question. If you know the answer, you will win Binge Times. That is the wonderful new book by John Chvilinsky and Dade Hayes, who were on our show a couple weeks ago to talk about it. By the way, they'll be talking about it later this week. This coming week at Series Fest 2022 in Denver. Here's the question. What was Robert Conrad's first television series? What was Robert Conrad's first television series? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if you first select the answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end today, post the question tomorrow morning, Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so, and all the very best. And now joining us live from the East Coast, the executive producer of Holy Moly on ABC, Charles Wachter. Charles, welcome back.
Hi, thank you. Not sure what happened there.
Well, sometimes we have a little gremlin somewhere along the line. Yeah. Between you and me, it just rears me. It's just like one of the crazy things in your golf course. Just rears the ugly head.
Yeah.
But we're great to have you back. And welcome back. Congratulations on Season 4. How has the reaction from viewers been?
It's been fantastic. You know, I think by, being in Season 4, we've managed to sort of create a pretty large fandom that are super thrilled to see the show again. And then obviously bring in new people, and certainly Muppet fans have been new this year as well, sort of experiencing the show for the first time. So it's been exciting. It's been fun. It's one of the fun – I made a lot of TV shows over the years. And what I like to do is watch Twitter when a show goes, just because I know when the jokes are coming and when the big hits are coming, and I get to watch Twitter sort of explode in reaction. And by far, the Twitter feed for this show has been my favorite. It's like sort of like watching it with a live audience in a way. It's really cool.
Do you know if Holy Moly has led to more interest by people around the country in playing miniature golf?
You know, it's funny you say that. I've, like, played mini golf with my kids and stuff, and I'm always, like, kind of looking around the mini golf course being like, hey, you know, I don't know. I'd love to say yes. It's massive. It's growing. But mini golf doesn't have a lot of sort of centralized sort of sporting kind of coordination. There are a lot of mom-and-pop shops all over the place, so there's not a lot of opportunities for sort of getting a sense of that. To be honest, I mean, we've got a pretty big social media presence as an entertainment show, but I haven't seen that. But I think it's more just a function of way mini golf has always worked, which is very much kind of, you know, single property owners generally.
Mm-hmm.
I hope
so. Here you are, Season 4. How did the Muppets get into this?
You know, it was sort of organic. Like, I know they had done another ABC sort of guest spot. And when we were developing the show, part of the season, the idea is that Rob Riggles becomes obsessed with Holy Moly going forever. It's called Holy Moly Forever, Season 4. And he's convinced that it might not. And I think that's part of, you know, maybe my anxiety and some of our executive producer anxieties about hoping it goes forever, certainly. So we thought, the show's very meta, and so we thought it'd be very funny if Rob was trying to save the show. And that very, very early on kind of merged with our, you know, first discussions with the Muppets about what if it's like kind of the Muppet Saves Manhattan kind of vibe where the Muppets are recruited to help save Holy Moly. And then, you know, the two brands are very similar. They're irreverent, they're family-focused, they're very self-aware Hollywood kind of shows. It grew out of that idea organically, to be honest. And the Muppets were instrumental, really, in helping us craft it, because obviously they got a lot of experience with that type of storytelling and stuff. So it started small, honestly, and then it kind of grew and grew until we had a big script and, you know, a bunch of shoots.
Mm-hmm. Did it give you an opportunity either you or the Muppets to sort of do a little satire about the medium itself, you know, that kind of opportunity?
About the what?
About the medium, about TV itself.
About the medium. Yeah, 100%. Like our finale is literally all directed at our ABC executives. Like the final, there's a big finale number, and literally it's written and all the comedy is pointing in a very self-aware way at the hope that ABC picks up the series. And it's really funny, and the way we included the Muppets and built the Muppets around that are really funny. So yeah, absolutely. We're always talking about it. I mean, the opening of the show this season is Rob sensing that the budget's gone down because things are weird around Holy Moly, and he goes to ABC to talk to the president, and that's where he bumps into Kermit in the office of ABC. So it's a very self-aware show, and it's one of the fun parts of the show is that ABC, you know, not only lets us but encourages us to be playful with our sort of entertainment brand, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So as an executive producer, when you have now this new element, the Muppets, who are just, you know, a national treasure, and you also have the competition of, you know, the contestants playing this crazy, zany golf course, how do you balance it out so that we get a good chunk of the Muppet situation, but we also don't take away from the basic element of the show, which is these contestants and how they deal with their golf skills at this course?
Yeah, it's actually a really good question because we've thought about it a lot. So the A story of the show is always competition. It's always the North Star is the mini golf. We treat it like the Olympics. We are way over the top, and that will always be the sort of the beating heart of the show. And in the earlier seasons, we'd have interstitial comedy. There'd be like different interstitial things happening. And what we did with the Muppets for the first time was really create in those segments that happen 2, 3, 4 times an episode, you know, from anywhere from 30 seconds to a minute. We built a scripted storyline across the whole season. And then, and so rather than just kind of having funny cutaways and little segs with Stefan, we pulled Stefan into the Muppet storyline, and then we did one thought and something I'm super proud of, that we thought of, which is, we at the start of every episode, there's a previously on, but instead of the previously on being about the goal for the show, it's about the Muppets continuing storyline. So every episode starts with the Muppets continuing storyline, and you're like, oh yeah, Rob's worried about Holy Moly going away, and oh yeah, he met Kermit, and then this happened and that, and we constantly are re-establishing that kind of arc comedy. And even though it's only, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes in the show, because it's constantly reminded at the top of the show and it's this kind of constant beat through the show, you can remember and follow the scripted understory. But really it's the B or C story of the series because, as you say, like the competition is really what the show is about. This is the kind of – this is the sort of variety show part of it with the Muppets. And they were very good because they were the ones that pointed out we needed to pull Muppet storyline into the booth. And so Rob, like, falls in love with Miss Piggy, which doesn't go well for him. But, you know, he'll be in the booth, and then coming out of, like, a hole, Joe will be like, so how did it go with Miss Piggy? And Rob will be like, oh, it didn't go very well. You know, so we kind of scripted pieces for the booth that was kind of played as conversation to kind of keep the Muppet storyline alive inside the show, inside the mini-golf show, and not just in the segments that we shot specialty with the Muppets. So a lot of thought went into it, to be honest. You know, and you can't do too much because if you're away from the mini-golf for too long, it actually – start to fall apart a little bit because then you're not sure what you're watching.
Yeah. Well, ABC viewers can be sure that on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on the local ABC station, they can catch for sure Holy Moly Forever. And we've got Charles Wacko. He is the executive producer of the program. He joins us for the second time on this series live. Where on the East Coast are you today?
Actually, I'm in Toronto right now. Yeah.
Great
beautiful
city,
day.
As always, a wonderful production center.
Yeah, exactly. I actually grew up in Toronto, so I'm up here with my family. But it's exciting to watch Holy Moly get out. And we shot season 3 and season 4 together. So, you know, sometimes you shoot and then you cut and you air, and it's like right on your heels and you're in the thick of it. This one has actually been really joyful for me and my family to watch because I finished the show about 6 months ago. and you sort of forget all the little nuances and all the last minute decisions and upgrades, and watching it with a bit of distance has been a blast. Like, and I always show my family cuts of my shows just because I'm excited. But this one, because I know my kids would love the Muppets, I purposely hadn't showed them anything, and they got to watch the full thing for the first time on Tuesday, which was awesome.
Mm. Great parenting, absolutely. And if you have a question or comment for Charles, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, my lead guest will be one of the co-stars of the critically acclaimed new Star Trek series on Paramount Plus, Strange New Worlds. Got 100% rating from Rotten Tomatoes. The critics are saying it's anything from the best Star Trek series in decades to the best Star Trek series since The Next Generation. And one of the reasons why is my guest, co-star Bruce Horak. He is a very inspirational actor, producer, writer, and director. Why? Because for the most part of his life, he's been blind in one eye, and in recent years, the other eye is giving him all sorts of issues. But it's not stopping him from becoming a very special part of Star Trek Strange New World. Bruce Horak, my guest, lead guest, Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. I think you'll really enjoy meeting him. He is someone very, very special. And more guests, too, coming up also on Monday's program. Charles, what is the challenge of doing two seasons back-to-back, especially when you have an elaborate set, you have all these contestants for either one season or another? What's the challenge in terms of putting that all together, back-to-back season?
Yeah. Well, what's people don't probably realize about Holy Moly is that it's actually not even back-to-back. We shoot them simultaneously. So when we shoot, for example, Dutch Courage or Flaming Windmills, we shoot, when it was one season, we'd shoot all of the Dutch Courage events together. Like, anybody that Dutch Courage would do that. And then after lunch, which is one in the morning, we would move to another hole, and that hole would be, say, Donut Hole or the Pecker. And we would shoot all of those people playing those holes. Because the footprint of our shooting is so enormous to cover these huge sort of stunt holes, we shoot everybody who's going to play that hole all at once, and then we move on. Almost like a movie. You shoot out a location. So we shoot out our location at Dutch Courage. When we did it with two seasons, when we doubled up to two seasons, we were shooting two seasons worth of content at that one location. So the challenge was, from a story point of view, with Joe and Rob in the booth and me in their ear and our story teams, was, you know, someone would, you know, rock up to Dutch Courage, and I would know it's episode 4, round 3, and it's the second round, and they lost in the first, you know, they beat somebody in dramatic fashion in the first round, but that was actually 5 days ago. And then they play the hole, and then the very next person runs up, and it's actually a season 3 story. And Rob's not trying to save Holy Moly. Stephen Curry's trying to go pro. And it's totally different context and a totally different story of who that person playing is. So it required a huge amount of kind of story scripting, logistics, and tracking, because at any point we could be shooting any one of 20 episodes. Like, every 15 minutes we'd be shooting a different piece of a different episode across 20 episodes in two seasons. So it was hard, honestly. It was very challenging. And the really hard thing, actually, in editorial – was a lot of the comedy from the guys could go in either season, right? They're just, you know, a lot of their comedy is not specific to the player necessarily. Sometimes they're just talking about a sandwich. It's really funny. The hard part was not pilfering all the best stuff for season 3, because we were cutting it first. So we kind of almost had to build firewalls to say, okay, this is season 3 and this is season 4, and whatever's in your box, you get to keep. But you can't take from the other box season 3. And so that was that was a challenge as well. So it's a giant show. I mean, we shoot it in 12 days, and we've got hundreds. It's almost like we've got three TV shows running. We've got a TV show that's shooting the golf. Like, the golf is the heartbeat. Boom. And we just do not stop every 15 minutes. And we got one massive team shooting that. Then we've got a whole story team that's shooting all the contestants and the stories and the hero shots and the little bits and gags to do with the contestants. And that's almost like a cable TV show that's running underneath a big competition show. And then the third piece is a scripted comedy. Season 3, it was Steph Curry taking it pro. Season 4 is the Muppets save Holy Moly with Wriggle. And that's a whole scripted comedy gag team that are, you know, dealing with scripted scripts and sets and gags and things like that. And so all three are happening simultaneously, and we're doing all three for both seasons. So it's no small feat. to be honest. And the way I deal with it as the showrunner
is yeah. I was just saying that this kind of TV making sort of reminds me of two situations. One is My Three Sons, where Fred McMurray, the star, would come in twice a year to film all of his scenes for like 20, 30 episodes. I mean, like, let's say the first 15 in one shot, then the next 15 later in the year or the following year, and he'd do it with scenes with himself or with William Farley or William Demarest or the entire cast. And then everybody else would shoot the rest of the schedule without him. And it seemed Fred McMurray a lot of time to get on the golf course or whatever he had to do. And then you had Lapin. George Thor, the way he did that show was to do certain segments all at once. The joke wall all at once. The big 50 of the month week at once. You know, the party scene that opened a lot of the shows at once. He-Hulk, same thing. You know, they would do that for like twice a year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's similar, you know, in especially with shows where you're either on a tight budget or you've got a really big budget and you have to just be incredibly efficient about your time. Block shooting stuff makes a ton of sense. It's like a movie, right? Like, you don't want to keep going back. Even if a location shows up at the beginning, middle, and end of a movie, you're not going to go back and forth. You're just going to shoot out Endor and then move on. And there's a certain point at which the scale of your show gets to where doing camera moves takes too long. Like, if I had to move back and forth between holes, you know, like we do 7 holes in a show. Like, if I had to camera move every time I moved a hole in an episode, well, that would be an extra 45 minutes just to recable and move the techno jib and stuff. And then what happens is, you know, a 12-day shoot becomes a 30-day shoot. And your budget either balloons or then you start cutting all the money off the screen. So you sort of find those, like, logistical efficiencies. You know, a lot of times we sort of schedule it for 14 days, and then as the creative expands and gets expensive, we find ways, we start to understand our shoot better and start to lose a couple shoot days that can save upwards of a couple hundred grand a day. So it's fun. I enjoy both of it. I love the creative stupidity of the show. I really do love writing it and being with Joe and Rob in their ear and stuff. But I also am, you know, with the other incredible executive producers on the show, like Michael Sullivan and Kate Shelbourne in post, really enjoy the logistics of figuring out how to make the show as well. So it's a really unique one as well, to be honest.
One of the great features about the show from season to season has been the growing rapport between Joe Tessitore, who I think is one of the best play-by-play people in football, whether college or pro, as people who have seen ESPN or can tell you, or ABC can attest, and Rob Riggle. Yeah. And I'm curious, it seemed that in the first season, it was a nice, really refreshing thing to see and see it off the bat. And it seems that season after season, it has gotten even better.
Yeah, I think watching, you know, for me, I saw it unfold organically, season one, and then we cut it and we started to really kind of like surface it into the cut, right? Because a lot of times you can throw away stuff that doesn't sort of fit the mold, but we didn't do that. And to ABC's credit, they also saw the value in this sort of friendship. And then once they saw the show, they kind of also saw what worked. And what we do on the show, I mean, first of all, like, you know, Rob's a funny guy, Joe's the play-by-play guy. That's kind of how it's perceived. But the truth is that it's like they're like the Smothers Brothers. Like, they really work as a duo. Joe knows how to set Rob up instinctually for payoffs, and Rob knows when to kind of push and pull with Joe to put him in a funny position. Like, Joe's sense of comedic timing is incredible. And the sort of chemistry that works between the two of them is very organic. And the way we do it is, I mean, a lot of it's scripted, like our bumps and throws and stuff like that. But a lot of the stuff that's really, really funny is not scripted. Something funny happens and the guys just go. And the way they do it is we never stop rolling. Like, they, you know, it's a really tough shoot for the guys because they don't sit in and bang it out and get up and go do something. They sit down for about 5 straight hours. And we're just watching the show. Like, you know, I've got all the feeds, right, in the truck. And those guys are watching the line cut, which our director, Alex Van Wagner, is, like, pumping to them. And they're just watching the show, hanging out. and they're just joshing and they're sort of chasing ideas, and we never stop rolling. Like, the we may even have stopped shooting on the course completely, and Joe and Rob are still doing stuff. They're still talking, and they now understand their character on the show, that even when they fall out of character, they're still in character. They're still aware that I'm rolling. And so something that would actually start as a normal conversation between two friends, because it's on camera, will quickly develop into a gag. And then they'll kind of like give me a button, and then we'll make sure it's got like a connection to what we're shooting at the time, and then I can drop it in the show. So it's almost like an improv performance more than it is they watch 2 hours of golf. You know, they actually improv for 10 hours is what they do, which is different, right? That's like, it's a very grueling, high demand kind of way of doing a show. Usually you just have hosts do the script and then they watch a bit of footage. So, you know, it'd be like calling the Super Bowl, but he calls it for 12 days straight, all day, you know.
And that's tough for a play-by-play person to do that kind of, that have that level of quality of voice, quality of being on your feet in terms of the action. Not easy.
It's truly grueling. And to be honest, they get really tired, and then that gets fun because they're kind of over it, you know. And then we play that. Like in season one, they almost froze to death because I hadn't figured out I got to build a booth for them. So by season two, we built a giant booth so they're warm. But the season one, we didn't have that. Actually, season two, we didn't have it either, I don't think. And just the kind of survival aspect of the show ended up being part of the comedy. Like, literally, they were just freezing to death, and that became a running gag and stuff like that. So, really, everything's fair game. The cameras are rolling, and we're just kind of having fun. I mean, we have a lot of fun on the show, and I think it shows, honestly. Yeah.
So, Charles, before you go, what are you up to now? What's been happening since the production wrapped on season four?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, actually. I'm really super psyched because we've got Joe and Rob are hosting the American Rescue Dog Show, which I produced with Michael Levitt for ABC. And I'm going to look on my phone to give you the exact air date because I hope people tune in. That is airing on May 25th, Wednesday, May 25th on ABC at 10 p.m. And what it is it's like a dog show, but instead of it being, you know, fancy breeds for Westminster, it's a dog show that is celebrates rescues of all stripes and with categories like best in snoring, best in talking, best in fetching, best in underbite. So it's a really sweet show about dogs and all the things they give to us, but Joe and Rob are calling it, which is super exciting. And I'm also working on another parenting series for ABC as well, which I start shooting on Monday. So lots of ABC stuff going on.
And again, the program is Holy Moly Forever with the Muppets and Joe Tessitore and Rob Riggle and Jeannie Mai and Steph Curry and all those wonderful golf holes. And you can see the next episode this coming Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. And don't forget that that's part of a great unscripted night of activity and action. The Chase follows the brand new season with three new chases, Victoria Gross, Brandon Blackwell, and Buzzy Cohen, remember him from Jeopardy, joining Brad Rutter, James Holzhauer, Sarah Haynes, and the crew there. And that's at 9 o'clock. And, of course, at 10, we have the producers on a couple weeks ago, Who Do You Believe?, which is off to a terrific start as well. And that's all on your local ABC stations. Or check your local listings for the ABC station in your area. For more details about the program online, go to abc.com. And once again, the American Rescue Dog Show, also hosted by Joe Tessitore and Rob Riggle, coming to your local ABC station on May 25th. It's May 25th, the American Rescue Dog Show. I think you'll find it a really special, special. Charles Wachtel, thank you again for joining us. A pleasure all the way. We'd love to have you back anytime. And congratulations to you and everybody for what sounds like a fantastic fourth season.
Great. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Charles. Take care. Have a fantastic weekend.
You too. All right. Bye.
Charles Wachtel joining us live from Toronto, Canada. One more time. Final time for this classic trivia question. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. You could win the brand new book about television, Where Is That, Where It's Going, Binge Time, from John Cibulski and Dade Hayes, who, by the way, will be speaking next week at Series Fest in Denver. The question again, what was Robert Conrad's first TV series? I'll give you a hint. It was for ABC. I'll give you another hint. It was for Warner Brothers. So If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name. We're emailing from you. If you've won before, you're not eligible. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so in all the very best. Thank you again to Charles for being with us today and all of you for tuning in. We're back on Monday. Our lead guest will be from the brand new critically acclaimed Star Trek series on Paramount Plus, Strange New World, co-star Bruce Horak. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up an episode you missed, as always, go to that homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or check out our podcast. The podcast of this episode will be coming your way in a few minutes on all of our affiliates, from iTunes to Apple Podcasts, Speaker Podcast, Tune.com, iHeartRadio, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And remember that all of our podcasts are available 24/7 at all of those places and more. We love hearing from you. Love to know what you thought about today's show. What's your thoughts about takeaway of the week? I really want to hear what you think about Shopful TV. Do you think it has a great chance to make it? Would you use what Roku is up to? Or maybe someone else, if let's say Walmart or Target or Big Lots or Dollar Tree or Home Depot or Lowe's decided to do shoppable merchandise through your television set. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Also find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. However you communicate with me, I communicate back to you within 24 hours. That's our commitment. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. First, here are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Cho is BTR's general manager. Dave Sonnenberg is head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast outpost. For details, go to onpodium.com. Guitarist Bakers is our web coordinator. Tomorrow we televised is brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free audio book or two and much more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Great way to listen to all the good stuff. And remember, it makes a great gift for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Everyone out there, have a fantastic weekend. We are back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our great podcast affiliates. Whatever you're doing now and then, please make it safe and make it great. If you haven't been vaccinated, check in with your doctor. Find out what your medical situation is. Don't forget there's lots of treatments now available to you that weren't there before, including the Pfizer and Merck pills. Take them 5 days if you get the virus, and everything back in good shape and up to the next normal. But whatever, find out what is available to you and then make a great choice. And, of course, have it be your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.